Hello, my oral surgery friends. This is your host, Dr. Grant Stupi. In this podcast, you will hear surgeons discussing ways to improve the practice of oral and maxillofacial surgery. The goal of this podcast is to evaluate every aspect that a surgeon can improve in order to create a better experience for patients, staff, and the surgeon. Most of the information shared in this podcast will be based on personal experience and opinions. The methods discussed are meant to provoke thought and should be supplemented with research into the approved studies prior to making changes to one's way of practice. Without further ado, please enjoy this episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. Welcome to another episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. Today I'm here with Dr. Scott Weisskopf and Dr. Jake Stuckey. Good to be with you guys to discuss some awesome topics.
Yep.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to be here.
Yes. So you guys have both been on the podcast before. I really appreciate you coming back. Today we were going to talk just a little bit about some of the nuances of the dental or surgical forceps that we use. This topic is more for those who are kind of beginning their path with oral surgery. But I guess the first question for us is, first of all, what is the purpose of the forcep? Jake, you want to field this one?
Yes, I'll start out with the basic. So, you know, we recently had an episode on the elevators and discussed how, you know, you can start elevating the tooth, breaking the PDL fibers. And then once, you know, it's ready, you can move on to the forceps. So the forceps essentially are designed in such a way that they can grasp the tooth, you know, the anatomical crown and ideally a little bit below there. And you can start moving the tooth, you know, buccal, lingual, little rotation, depending on which tooth it is, and, you know, continue compressing the bone while you essentially just, you know, extract the tooth.
Yes. I guess a quick question for you, Scott, is because we discussed this a little bit, but how much do you elevate and use elevators before you actually use a forceps?
So pretty much every single tooth I extract, I'll use elevators first. Just to loosen the tooth, just to it's kind of a means to prepare the tooth for the forcep. You know, you start getting a forcep on a tooth that's not ready to come out, you're going to get into trouble. The possible exception, and even in this case, I still use elevators first. Is, you know, say like you're using an anatomical forcep on a lower molar, say 23, which is happens to be my favorite forcep. I will use that quite often to split the tooth, and so I'm not using it for extraction. I'm using it just to split the tooth. You know, when I use the 23 on a lower molar, several things are going to happen. Either I'm going to take the tooth out, I'm going to split the tooth, or I'm going to fracture the crown off. And all three of those scenarios are going to make it easier for me to remove that tooth. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be extraction is my goal for the forcep, but it's another tool to help me remove it completely.
Yeah, totally agree. That the elevators are super helpful in most cases to loosen it, to get it ready. And that's probably one of the smaller things that distinguishes somebody new from maybe someone more experienced, is that probably newer people are jumping too quick to the forceps and cranking on a tooth that's not quite ready or prepared. And then that's, you know, when you can snap off crowns or, you know, I guess just waste time. But important for sure to do that groundwork with the elevator. I mean, the next kind of set of questions is which forceps should be used. Maybe we can just go around the mouth here and kind of answer this one and start, you know, with go from 1 to 32. So maxillary molars, you know, what is the best forceps to use in your guys' experience?
So when I first was training at the VA, they had the anatomic for the uppers, which was, we actually had like the 88 RNL. And those worked great. They're more like it looks almost like a three-pronged, kind of like a separated forceps, and they, you know, grab it really well. But I know that there's I believe you use the 89 and 90. It's like almost like the up, more, looks a little bit closer to a cow horn, which I've seen used and seems like it works very well also.
Yep. Scott, what do you use?
Yeah, so for third molars, upper third molars, I'll use a 150. You know, I think it's just simple. It works well. But for especially first molars, I'll use an 89 and a 90. I just have a lot more luck with that than the 53 RNL. It's slightly less aggressive, but it ultimately comes down to what works for you. you know, what you have the most comfort with, what you have the most experience with, because, you know, my favorite may not be somebody else's favorite. You know, it just kind of depends on what works in your hands. But for upper molars, I'll typically use either 150 or 89 or 90.
Yeah, same here. I mean, we were in the same training program, so I'm sure we do a lot the same. I would say with the maxillary third molar, you know, half the time I'll get in there and start elevating and kind of almost elevate and just pop the tooth completely out of the socket. And oftentimes we don't even use an elevator. It's just assistant suctioning with the Fraser tip and the whole thing comes right out. Or maybe it's just quickly grab the rongeurs and remove the tooth. But yeah, probably if I'm using a forceps, it's the 150 on the third molar and then the anatomic. I like the 89 and 90 just because it's not too, like the palatal part is kind of not so aggressive. I've seen some forceps where it's big, huge palatal prongs that are going up in there. And the 89 and the 90 just seem a little more condensed and not such a big extension. I don't know if you've tried different ones, Scott, but we were trained on the 89 and 90. And so,
yeah,
it's a great forceps.
So I teach at the dental school part-time, and for some reason they like the 53 RNL down there a lot, and they do have 89s and 90s, and so I'll see students use the 53 RNL, and almost always they're fracturing crowns and we've got to dig out roots, and it's just, you know, for I think someone starting out, an 89 or 90 is a little bit better for the same reason you just said. It's just it's a little bit less aggressive. They can get a little bit better grasp on the tooth without destroying it.
Okay, I agree with the premolars. You know, what forceps are you using, and are you doing anything different for like a second premolar, let's say number 4 versus number 5? Is there any difference there on what you guys use?
Well, for upper, I'll use a 150 on both of them. You know, I don't go too crazy with a whole bunch of different forceps. If it's so upper premolar is always a 150. Lower premolars, I'll almost always use an ash. If it's a single rooted tooth, relatively close to the front of the mouth, I'll use an ash. So the maxilla, canine to canine, mandible, you know, first, second premolar, sometimes to the adjacent one. It just the rotation that you can get on that. It's almost, you know, it almost feels like cheating sometimes. It's so easy to take out single rooted incisors and canines.
Okay. How about you, Jake? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely like a classic hot topic for the first bunch of episodes. It's like, you know, the ash versus, you know, something else. And I've definitely tried both. I feel like they both work. I definitely like the ash, like for sure on the lowers, like you mentioned, because they're single rooted. I have tried them on the uppers, and even with like, you know, the first premolar, can get like a little bit of rotation. You want to, like, I'm always obviously careful, like we've mentioned, because you don't want to just snap those roots or get root tips in there and just cause more of a headache for yourself. But I definitely have seen them work. I was going to ask, is that something that you guys do you try to avoid? Because I've heard kind of two different ways, which is some people try to do a hair of rotation on almost every single tooth or many teeth, even if they are multi-rooted, and other people are just like a hard no, you know, definitely don't. It doesn't help sort of concept.
Yeah, I personally don't. That's the reason I don't use the ash up on top for upper first premolars. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just feel like you're not going to get the same benefit from rotation. That's why I use the 150 and just, you know, buccal palatal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say similar things. Usually for me, like a number 4, I would usually use the ash for. I'm more hesitant to use the ash on a number 5 or 12 because of those two mm-hmm. sometimes spindly roots. Just want to be careful, and especially a tooth that's got like any cervical decay on one side. Usually if you put the ash on that, the crown is going to snap off like immediately.
Yeah.
I would also say too that like all ashes are not made the same. Like there's a huge variety of ashes out there, I've noticed. I'm a big fan of the KLS one that's like more, I guess you could say, narrow and rounded. There's some ashes that have like a middle prong in there, like it's trying to get into the between the roots on certain multi-rooted teeth. Those don't make any sense to me. What ash do you use, Scott?
I've noticed the difference between ashes as well. So some are more, you know, instead of the beaks kind of more parallel, they're almost kind of coming in almost like a cow horn, and those tend to fracture the tooth a little bit more because you're putting a little bit more pressure on that one spot versus a little bit more of the ash kind of in contact with the tooth. I believe we use KLS though at the office. So it seems to work pretty well.
Okay. And then the other question is about the 150, because I think a lot of people at first put a 150 on a premolar or, you know, maybe a canine, and they try to do rotation, and the 150 is just slips around, and you feel like you're rotating, but the tooth is not rotating at all. And so that's when you're like, screw this, give me the ash. And the ash you can rotate anything with. There's different 150s. I know at UIC, Dr. Flick, you know, uses like a serrated one that's has more of a grip. What are you guys using?
I just have the traditional 150 at the office. I know that the 150, I think it might be the 150 AS that has that little bit more serration on there.
Yeah.
And honestly, I haven't thought about that since residency. It may be something I may need to add a couple to the arsenal, but usually I do just fine with the traditional one, because if I'm trying to get rotation on it, you know, the ash works pretty fine. And that kind of goes a little bit back to technique as well. You know, it's about seating the forceps as apically as you can. You know, anytime you talk about forceps and technique, everyone always talks about, you know, apical pressure, and that phrase has never really helped me much. You know, it's never helped me, you know, use a forcep, but seating the forcep as apically as you can is kind of it helps me better in my mind, just to get as good a grip on it as you can, as apically as you can. And a lot of times that's going to involve reflecting some tissue. If you're not sure at all about how sound the tooth structure is, and you can't visualize what's more apical, you have to remove tissue. I tell, you know, at the dental school, it's something that the students struggle with all the time. You know, and I tell them you can't take out what you can't see, and so, you know, they're so afraid to just, you know, reflect tissue, and I'm not talking about huge vertical releasing incisions or anything like that. Just, you know, pop the papilla on either side of the tooth and just get a little bit more visualization, and sometimes that makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. We just use the standard 150, and with the ashes, I have noticed also, like, there are some that kind of the point is kind of comes to a little bit narrower, and it seems to me like it's a little easier to snap teeth when the tip of the forceps is more narrow. Like you guys were mentioning, you just put too much force if you're not seated down far enough. If there's caries in the tooth, that happened many, many times where you break it. And I agree. Like, you know, when I was first heard about that term, like apical pressure, it's kind of hard to know whether it's like, okay, so you have a grasp on the crown. Now, are you just physically pushing the whole thing down? You know, is that part of the extraction process? Because I was told that, you know, when I was first starting, or is it versus, you know, just like you're not necessarily grabbing the crown, you know, firmly yet, and you're just sliding the forceps as far apically as you can, and then getting a good grasp. Which that second one, like Scott was mentioning, to me has definitely helped reduce the amount of times that I've snapped the crown off. And I think it just comes back to basic physics. You know, if you can grab like lower down on that fulcrum, you're going to have a lot less force on the top of that tooth.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's another common mistake, because I think a lot of, especially probably general dentists or people who aren't real familiar with, you know, reflecting flaps are kind of more afraid to do that. And so they just jump to the forceps. But I've found that it seems weird, but even just putting your periosteal and moving the tissue down makes it much easier to seat your forceps. I think, you know, if you're a big tough guy, you think, I don't even need a periosteal. I'll just take the forceps and slide it down, and that will get as deep down as possible. But it sounds weird, but really the tissue can, even the gingival tissue can stop that forceps from going down. That, you know, if you don't reflect at all, you risk just smashing the tissue and doing all sorts of damage.
It's funny you mentioned that with the periosteal. Every single tooth I take out, I don't know if it's OCD or just, you know, just a habit, but every single tooth I take out, I start with the number 9 periosteal. I go around the tooth, you know, even if it's flapping in the breeze, it's just something I do all the time, and you know, it just seems to help.
For sure.
Makes you feel good. So it's important. All right. So maxillary anterior teeth, it's probably, you know, ash or 150, like you're mentioning. Lower single rooted teeth, it's the 151 or the ash. How about those, you know, maxillary molars? You know, for me, it's if it's a kind of a, what do you call it, diverging roots, then I would use a cow horn. If they're like a single conical root, then I'd usually use the 151.
For the mandibular molars?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you guys do for that?
Yeah, for sure. I agree with what you said. If it has a nice forcation and I feel like I could seat the 23, the cow horn in there. I love the cow horn. It's awesome. I remember I was taking out a tooth in the hospital for this patient that was like going to get like this massive heart surgery the next morning. And long story short, I had to just do it right then. And I didn't have like a lot of instruments. It was like a number 30 divergent root. And this is like right when I started, I was like struggling. I was like, if I snap this off, I'm toast. We don't have a drill, nothing like that. So my chief like swing by and helped me. And was like, you know, you do the buccal lingual, you do kind of that, like a little bit of that rotation, almost like a rudder. And then you do, you know, like obviously the pumping action to like really seat it down in there. And if you have a good frication and you're doing those three movements, which like combined is like that classic, like, you know, figure eight, it's, you can get out, you know, some pretty amazing mandibular molars.
Yep.
And then if it doesn't have the frication, you know, what I've seen, at least for me, is it's very easy to try to squeeze when you're trying to pump that down, and it just slides either mesial or distally. You can't really get a good grip. So you kind of move on to the 151.
Yeah. So for me, for lower molars, I'll almost always either use a 23 or a 17. I really like the 17 forcep. It's pretty much a 151 with a slight little point in the middle to kind of engage a little bit of that concavity in the roots on either side. Just get a little bit better grip with it. And the only time I'll use a 151 for molars, let's say it's I try the 23 and I section the tooth, and I'll just use a 151 on the individual sections and get those out. A 17 really is a good forcep for me.
Okay.
But yeah, it's kind of a, yeah, you have to kind of gauge it based on how high the furcation is. If you've got wide splayed roots and a high furcation, I'll always start with the 23. You know, if the roots are fused, the furcation's really low, I'll start with a 17.
Okay. As far as using the 23, just to piggyback on that, you know, once I've reflected the tissue with the periosteal, usually I see the lingual, you know, prong of the 23 or the cow horn there. And it's really firm lingual, and then I rotate buccal, and you know, then it's pumping, and then it's figure eight, things like that usually can get most teeth out. Sometimes even if like most of the crown is gone, I'll still put the 23 on it almost just to section the roots, you know, and half the time it'll actually grab one of the roots out. But that can be a good way too, even just to skip your handpiece sometimes, just put that on there and snap the roots, and boom, you get the rongeurs and pull the roots out.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Any other things you guys do as far as technique when you're holding them?
Well, you'd mentioned, you know, seating the lingual first on the lower for that 23, which I think is a decent point to kind of to talk about again, is you can, you know, with a number 23 forcep like that, you can do some damage to soft tissue if you're not in a good spot. So it's a really good idea to seat that first, know where you're at. You know, keep that there and then go to the buccal and then seat that where you can see a little bit better. Just definitely kind of watch the soft tissue. But yeah, I'll do that exact same thing. And the first movement I'll do is the pumping motion. And once I start to see the crown elevate a little bit, then I'll start doing a little bit of rotation, a little bit of buccal lingual.
Okay.
So quick question for you guys. So sometimes I'll see, like, let's say, you know, either the crown's broke off or there's just not a lot of clinical crown, but you can still see like where the furcation is. I've seen that sometimes you can grab, like you mentioned, Grant, you can still use the cow horn, but you almost need to grab a little bit of like the buccal lingual bone just ever so slightly to like start engaging it and get into those furcations. Do you guys ever do that where you use the forceps and you do start by grabbing a little bit of bone, or do you like to avoid that and just move on to the drill if you get to that point?
You know, for me, I like to avoid that, but you know, if it's a patient that has no interest in implants and we're getting the tooth out and you know, it's certainly reasonable to do that. I've done that in the past. You know, in my office, I've got a handpiece set up, you know, for every case just off to the side where I can easily grab it. So, you know, if it's easily accessible, I'll just grab the handpiece and split mm-hmm. it and try to preserve bone just to minimize discomfort for the patient. But yeah, you can absolutely do that if you're in a bind, you don't have a handpiece or, you know, something's going on like that.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think that's something that is a little challenging in residency, depending on, you know, where you're at, is sometimes when you make that decision, I'm going to start using a handpiece. It's like, the patients are like, oh, something happened. Like, you got to set stuff up. Like, was it too hard? What's going on? So I do think that having that part of your protocol where you just have handpieces ready, set up, you know, and if you make that decision, you just, boom, use it. Makes things a lot quicker.
Definitely.
I was also going to say, when you're seating lingual, I always, you know, kind of put the prong at the tip of it, maybe like midway on the crown of the tooth, and then I slide down mesial. Because I want that prong to touch hard tooth first and feel that I'm on hard tooth, and then I'm sliding down into that sulcus. You know, I'm just terrified about that sharp hook, you know, getting soft tissue, and heaven forbid you grab the lingual nerve or part of the tongue or the floor of the mouth. So like that for me is like a very slow, relatively slow process where I'm like very, very confident that I'm on the tooth and I slide down into the sulcus. I don't know. Is that something you guys do?
Oh, for sure. And then you just like hold that pressure on the lingual and pivot while you seat the buckle. So you know right. that the lingual doesn't, you know, get off of the hard tissue. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great forceps, but, you know, can be dangerous. So yes, that's helpful. How about once you get to the mandibular third molar, let's say, you know, you have partially erupted or erupted and it's more conical roots, you know, is that the same thing, 150 or the 17, or kind of just depends on the root shape?
Yeah, most of the time for erupted lower thirds, I'll start with the 17. Occasionally, if it's maybe the patient's opening is not ideal, I'll actually use a 150 just because it kind of gives me that angle a little bit better. I don't have to have as much distance between the upper teeth and that lower third. And I just really need something to kind of grab it and wiggle it back and forth a little bit. And even though it's not the right forceps for a lower tooth, sometimes I just have to, you know, that's all I can use because the opening is limited.
Yep. That's a good tip for sure. Another question is, I know a lot of people love using the rongeurs for roots. It's a very popular thing and it still works great for me. Is there any other forceps you guys would reach for if it is just a root tip or a piece of a root? Or is it always the rongeurs? Or, because I know there are like root tip forceps and different things people use.
For me, I usually just go for the rongeurs. And I mean, I can't really think of a scenario where I don't. But I agree that like, I was probably in dental school where you're taught with, you know, whether it was Felsenfeld, whoever it was, I don't like using the rongeurs if there's any enamel. Some people just grab that thing and it's no big deal. They just will use it on any tooth at any time. But, you know, once it's just like cementum, you know, like they say, it's essentially like very similar composition to bone. Just go for it. What about you, Scott? Do you have any other scenarios where you use something else?
I'm a really big fan of the rongeur. I use that quite a bit. And often what really helps me, especially in the maxilla where you have a tooth that's, you know, flush with the bone, I'll take the rongeur and just kind of nibble away a little bit. I'll seat it on, you know, maybe you've got a little bit above bone on the palatal. So I'll seat the one beak of the rongeur on that, and then I'll just nibble away a little bit of the buccal bone. And then I'll either extract the tooth with the rongeur, or I'll get a 150 up there, but it's great. You know, I use it for roots all the time.
Yes, same here. And you brought up that point before of the different forceps that, you know, require different amounts of mouth opening for the forceps. I think probably the ash is the one that requires the largest opening because it's just that 90 degree. And so, I mean, frequently I was, you know, small people, small opening, and there's no way I can get an ash in there at all. And so, yeah, it's either the 151 or the 150. So helpful things. In regards to where you actually get your forceps, Scott, do you have any lean and mean tips on how to not pay top dollar for your forceps?
Oh gosh, you know, honestly, I am not all that involved in the decision making on where they come from. We've got a pretty good stockpile at the office, and you know, luckily we haven't had to buy a whole lot since I've been there. So you know, I joined a practice that had a good amount of forceps, and they just seemed to work for me. Now, definitely not forceps, but, and this may be the wrong podcast for it, but one thing that I'm going to definitely recommend is, so A-Titan has these, you know, I'm not even sure if you'd call them root tip picks. I think they call them exotomes, but those things are amazing. I use them like root tip picks. When you've got a root in an extraction site, I would absolutely recommend, these things are like magic. And I have no stock in A-Titan at all. I'm telling this to you as one oral surgeon to another. These things are great. So, you know, for root tips, they're amazing.
So I just looked them up. Is it, the end is almost like a spade elevator, but they're kind of like different shapes and sizes?
Yeah. So it's just a thin handle, and it looks like a spade, but it's really, really thin and wide versus your typical root tip pick that's really, really narrow. And most of the root tip picks that I've seen are just really thick, and you just can't get them in the space between the root and the bone. These are just so thin that you can just kind of wedge them in there and give a little bit of wiggle, and the root just pops right out. They really are good. And I've only broken them once, and I use them all the time.
Awesome. Good to hear. Yeah, we were just discussing how like elevators, root tip picks, you know, any instruments that are just too, you know, thick at the end, whether it's like the curve or the, you know, how the metal, it's just like almost useless if you can't get them in and get that purchase.
Yeah.
Cool. One question I was going to ask you guys is, a hot topic in residency sometimes, at least among certain attendings, is whether you hold your forceps, you know, with your hand facing up, like underhand, or facing down. Maybe it's, you know, varies based on which forceps you're using. Maybe it's completely, you know, personal preference. It doesn't actually matter, but just curious to see what you guys do.
Let's see. For lower teeth, I'll usually put it on top, and for upper on the bottom. And you know, I would say occasionally if I'm struggling with a tooth and you know, the forearm's starting to cramp up a little bit, I'll switch. Okay. I'll usually use it one way or another.
Okay.
I say for me, 90% of the time I have palm facing up towards the ceiling. For me it's just awkward. My shoulder's up high, I'm trying when my hand's on top and palm is down. But a lot of that depends on my position, because I sit and stand, and it kind of depends on how big the patient is and, you know, whether I'm sitting or standing, but usually it's palm up for me.
Okay. I mean, I know most of it is personal opinion and different amounts of power based on your position, but good to hear. There's a variety.
Scott, with those A-Titan, are you talking about like the spade tip exotome kit that has like 5 of them in there, with some of them have an angle on them, or no?
So I was looking at the website the other day, and I saw that what I have is a straight and then a left and a right. So there's it's angled left and right. So I think it's 3 out of the 5 in that kit. I don't know if they sell the 3 anymore, but when I purchased them back in the day, it was just 3, and
okay.
I can pretty much do anything I need to do with those 3.
Cool. I will tell you that I have definitely bought many instruments on Amazon, because, you know, like for example, the main supplier I use is KLS, and they'll, you know, what, okay, I tell my guy, his name's Jake. Jake, can I get a, you know, 23? Of course. You know, one forceps is what, $300, sometimes $400. And then you go on Amazon, you see like what looks to be the same forceps for $15. And you're just like, what the heck is going on here? Like, this is highway robbery. I think generally the forceps on Amazon are not as good. I have actually found some that I really like from Amazon that are $20 or $30, and it's pretty crazy.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Does the same go for Rongers? I've heard those are kind of expensive.
I haven't found any good Rongers on Amazon. I still have to keep sucking it up and going to KLS for their $300 Rongers. I use like a narrower, thinner Rongers, Scott. I don't know, because there's so many different types, and I feel like smaller almost the better. What do you think?
So on my tray, I've got I would say a normal size rongeur. It's not too narrow. But then I've also got kind of in the drawer a couple of really small ones that occasionally are useful if I'm trying to get into a tight space. So I'll just use the bigger one normally, and then I have the smaller on standby if I need it.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's really, really helpful. I think, summary points for those who are just getting into it is, do your work with the elevator and the periosteal. So periosteal, elevator, and then forceps, and make sure you're using the right forceps. Another tip I would say is sometimes I'm surprised by how often, let's say we're dealing with number 19 and, it's diverging roots. And so, okay, my assistant knows already, get the cow horn out. But oftentimes, like if I'm going with the cow horn, so that initial forceps that I, use, I work it and tooth isn't moving really much. And half the time I'll just say, let's switch. Let's do the 150 and try my other one. And it works. Or the other way around where, I start with the 150 and, hey, let me try the 23 real quick. And that works. So sometimes even just switching forceps can all of a sudden just pops right out. It's weird how different forceps can grab a tooth differently. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, my philosophy with taking out teeth is pretty much if you're doing the same thing and you're trying the same technique for 60 seconds and you're not getting any change, try something different. So if you're using a 23 and maybe even less than 60 seconds, but if you're just not getting much mobility and much movement, try something else. You just gotta kind of let the tooth tell you how to take it out.
Mm-hmm. So last time we also talked about just like there's certain scenarios where you might want to avoid using an elevator. For you guys, are there certain scenarios where you look at a tooth, whether it's like badly decayed, root canal treated, whether it's next to the sinus, I don't know, number of factors, and you would decide to just forgo the forceps as the first step, and then section it, and then attempt to take it out?
The only time that I would do that, so for a lower molar, I'll almost always try with a forcep first, even if it's a root canal treated tooth. If I end up just fracturing the crown off, that makes it easy for me to visualize the two roots and get a handpiece in there to section it, So I'll always start with the forcep. For the only really exception to that is if I've got a maxillary molar that's very close to the sinus, I may go ahead and section that first, because I don't want to take that tooth out with a huge chunk of the sinus floor and then be staring into oblivion. Mm-hmm. Up there into the sinus. So I'll section it first, try to take it out as gently as I can to preserve sinus floor.
Nice.
Yeah. Just another note on using those, or taking out maxillary molars, is no matter what forceps you use, I'm always very careful, because as we got three roots that are in different directions. And even with the 89 or the 90 or an anatomic forceps, if you're doing too much buccal pressure when you're using that thing, you're for sure going to snap a big chunk of the buccal plate off. And so I think that's more of one that's finesse and trying to work it and knowing when, hey, let's stop and section the tooth and take it piece by piece, because I'd rather do that, do like the Y section and take each root out if that tooth isn't budging, than, put the Brutacane on it and then just bust the whole buccal plate off.
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly. Well, and one thing I hate to see is when, I'm elevating a tooth, and if you, break a tip of the root off and it's just, so close to the sinus, if you have to go digging up there and you're, concerned that it might pop it up into the sinus, and it's no fun to break off the tip of a root when you're anywhere, right? Let alone next to the sinus. So in your guys' experience, the best way to, let's say you're elevating a tooth and you're using the forceps, it's going good. Between then and getting it out, what's the best way to avoid breaking, a small piece of the root tip off? Is it, like you mentioned, controlling pressure? Is it not going too far, exaggerated with your movements in terms of buccal lingual? What have you guys found is helpful?
Gosh, that's probably one of the hardest things to learn when you're taking out teeth is I think it's about how much pressure that you put on it, how much movement you do. It's really about that finesse. It's just one of those things that you learn over time. And even the best oral surgeon is going to break off root tips. It happens all the time. You know, it's just it's a matter of trying not to, and then being able to handle it when it does.
Yeah. I would say in general, you know, the concept that you should have in your mind is always start with mesial distal twisting as much as you can on any tooth. I think that's a big mistake. Most people, dental students, see a forceps and in their mind it's more buccal lingual and they just start cranking buccal lingual. Whereas even a Cowhorn or lower, you know, 150, I still just start going mesial distal and twisting more than, you know, what's the opposite of twisting, but just back and forth pressure.
Like tilting, I guess, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So really, really important points. I do apply apical pressure too. I think there's a lot of different things people do, but no, this has been a good discussion on forceps. I think we're just trying to open your mind to different options. Think about how you use a forceps and for sure put the groundwork in. What were you going to say, Scott?
So yeah, one thing I do want to bring up. So the only time I've had a patient swallow a tooth was in residency, and I was using a lower universal on a lower premolar, so 151 on a premolar. I had a throat pack in, but the way the universal is kind of at an angle with those beaks, it just shot that tooth up. I mean, you know, NASA could learn a few things from this with how quick that tooth shot up, and it hit the palate. It went right past my throat pack and right down the throat. So you've just got to really be careful with the forces on some of these forceps and make sure you have a good throat pack in, because sometimes these teeth can go flying.
Yep, I totally agree. I think especially the universals and even the Cowhorn, those are forceps that are more made to kind of pinch the base of the tooth and move it out of the socket, and not so much to actually hold on to the tooth once it's out. And so, you know, I mean, half the time it rockets out, but half the time it does pop out, but the forceps itself isn't great at holding it and the tooth slips out of the forceps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so important to have that throat pack there. And then my technical tip on that is like, 99% of the teeth I've seen be aspirated or swallowed, I swear to you, they're over 70 years old. They're always old people, because I think your gag reflex is different as you age. And, you know, I haven't had a ton of these, I will say more than one. And it's always someone who's generally like older, and that gag reflex is like just going nuts, and people are, I think it's sorry to go off on this, but it's very difficult when you have that really old patient, you put the throat pack in and they immediately start choking. You're like, oh, I can handle that. I don't. Okay. Now we can't put a throat pack in. We have a severe gagger and I'm taking out this tooth, you know, with a 151, and you know, it's going to rock it into the palate. Oh my goodness. What do you guys do for those cases?
That's hard.
I try to be super, super careful. You know, I try to have my assistant kind of, you know, behind the tooth with a suction or instrument. You know, sometimes, and you know, I wouldn't be ashamed to tell the patient, you know, listen, with your gag reflex, it's, you know, we may need to put you to sleep for this. It's, you know, it's not what the patient wants to hear. And in the past, occasionally I've had a patient that's just had a ridiculous gag reflex, couldn't afford sedation, so I just put them to sleep, no charge. I mean, it's not worth, you know, suffering through a terrible extraction with a high risk of aspiration under local anesthesia. So, you know, sometimes you just have to put them to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
A good point.
The other thing I could think of is just when I've done something in a similar situation, it's just going slower, you know, just being very, very careful. And when I get those teeth out, rather than just like, you know, boom, it's out. Yes. Like you could tell at that moment when you're like, okay, it's out, but like it's still sitting right there. Just like put up all the precautions, you know, maybe get the patient, you know, use your assistant to put their mirror on the other side, get your Minnesota kind of like at an angle behind it and like very gently, you know, scoop it out.
Yeah.
One little note on the throat pack is I've seen just different ways people use it, but I think like the key, like we've mentioned, is, you know, you don't want the tooth to be able to get down the airway. And so sometimes I think it's funny when like I'll have a new assistant or work with someone, they just like stick it and it's essentially just like under the tongue or just like sitting on the tongue, and you can just see the throat still just completely. And so I like to, you know, try to like show my assistants, you know, if the tooth went right over that, they would swallow, just scoot it up. And now I can't see the throat. Like, that's great. So like positioning the throat pack well for people who haven't, you know, used them a lot before is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some ads. I can't remember which company it is off the top of my hand, but it's like a sponge throat pack. They come in different sizes. I was wondering if any of you have ever used that before. You just use traditional 4x4s.
We use only the sponge at the VA. They have probably some sort of contract with them, so we use a ton of those. And you know, it seems to work well. It almost the exact same. You just pop it in. It like kind of expands itself. It's flat, kind of oval shaped, so you stick it in under, you know, on the lingual side of the teeth, and it literally holds its shape, which is great. It doesn't have any of those fibers which get like entwined in the drill, which is also great. The one thing that I noticed, I don't know how much they cost, maybe, you know, I'm sure they've got to be a little more expensive, but if you're doing like a longer case, you know, we still tend to only use one sponge, which, you know, can get like really saturated with blood. It's almost like you want to just wring the thing out, right? Whereas when you're using gauze, you have no problem just hucking a gauze, getting a brand new fresh one, which I think is nice. But for shorter, quick, easy cases, I think this, you know, sponge is a good alternative.
Okay. Are those, can you take it out of the mouth and kind of wring it out and then use the same one again?
Yeah, you can. It kind of goes back to that like risk of, you know, I've heard some people, once you take a gauze out of the mouth, you never stick it back in just because there might be some root fragments or junk and whatnot on there that could swallow. We do though sometimes, you know, if you're going through different steps of an implant or whatever it may be, we'll take it out and reinsert it, but just being vigilant not to have any root fragments on there.
Sure.
Another tip on the fork or on the throat pack is we always use 2 4x4s like rolled up, and we have this special way to put it in the back of the throat. I recently had kind of a new assistant and didn't realize that they were just using 1 4x4 instead of 2, because we were always trained to do 2. Anyway, so the assistant put 1 in during a sedation twice in a row. I was surprised at how easy it is for just 1 throat pack to be like almost just inhaled and to be lost in the back of the mouth and like disappear. And I actually had that happen almost twice in the same day where they did that. Throat pack went down. No one really noticed it. And the patient's gagging, kind of laryngospasming. I'm trying to like mask them. Like, what the heck is going on? Like, no air's passing. So I, you know, open them up, retract their tongue with the sweetheart. And sure enough, their gauze is like down on top of the epiglottis. I was like, son of a gun, dude. Almost that patient was a goner. Because I heard several years ago, an acquaintance of mine had a death, and that was what happened, was a single 4x4 got back into the airway.
Wow.
So don't know if you guys have experienced that, but tip of the day, use 2, not 1.
Yeah. And it goes back to kind of what I was saying. It's like every assistant might have worked with different, you know, surgeons or done things different way. Maybe they were just doing it with general dentistry, only did it like once a month, and just do it a different way. That's not necessarily safe or the way that you expect. So yeah, it's good to watch out for that.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys for these tips on forceps. It's a riveting topic. Have a good time with that and let us know. We're going to post on our Instagram account a little blurb on it. So please share any other tips you guys have on forceps. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. If you are an oral and maxillofacial surgeon and would like to be on this podcast, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com or text me at 720-441-6059. Also, if you have any topics that you would like to hear discussed or feedback on a certain episode that has already aired, please call or email or text me. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.